I'm going to turn now to Isaiah chapter 13. Isaiah chapter 13. And I'm going to read from verse 11 to 16, which talks of God's judgment. And the last time I spoke, we looked at the verses which immediately preceded it. And although the immediate fulfillment was God's, or Isaiah prophesying God's judgment upon the nation of Babylon, there seems to be a wider application here. It talks about, you know, things happening in the stars and the sun not giving its light. And of course that might be poetic, the sun will no longer give its light on Babylon, because Babylon will one day be destroyed. Or Isaiah is in fact looking at two things at once. He's seeing the destruction of Babylon, but he's actually seeing further off into the future as well, the destruction of the entire world in which we live. And I suggested a fortnight ago, or whenever it was, that although that the nation of Babylon was destroyed, the spirit of Babylon very much survived, which is why in the book of Revelation we have a picture of Babylon, the great wanton. And I would propose that Babylon may be a picture of global domination. It's certainly a picture of false religion. And we know that the word became flesh 2,000 years ago. Gospel light has been in this world for a long time, and yet false religion has proliferated. Idolatry has multiplied. Evil has not only survived, it has flourished, and it reigns on high. So I would propose that Isaiah is seeing something that was immediately fulfilled a few generations after he was writing, but also the fulfillment of the end of the age as we know it. And in one respect, it makes for quite grim reading, but do bear with me. Verse 11, I will punish the world for its evil, and the wicked for their iniquity. I will halt the arrogance of the proud, and will lay low the haughtiness of the terrible. I'll just pause there. Notice again that he's punishing the world for its evil, not just this particular nation, which sums up the world. But here we have the arrogant and the proud being halted, being stopped, and we have those who are haughty and the terrible being made low. Now they who think they are high, I've got the greatest fall to come. He goes on, I will make a mortal more rare than fine gold, a man more than the golden wedge of Ophir. Now, we are used to population growth. We expect our population to grow. I think the pensions industry rather depends upon the population continuing to grow year on year on year. But here we've got a time where the destruction will be so great that those alive on the earth, in fact, will be few. And of course, when Babylon was judged, when the Persians and the Medes judged it, a great many died. But I think Isaiah is beholding a time when there will be mass destruction of the earth. And of course, the destruction of the earth is now a popular feature of secular ideology as well. It's not just a religious idea, and we're told repeatedly that the world is about to end. So I was in Wiltshire last week, and I was in a small market town called Westbury, and the Westbury Town Council, which I dare say is a very august body of local bigwigs, erected a large sign in the town square warning of, and I quote, the climate catastrophe, and that we need to save our planet. Quite what Westbury Town Council thought we should be doing about it. Clearly there aren't enough problems in Westbury of a more immediate nature that they have to concentrate on such things. But the secular world now is telling us the world is about, some catastrophe is coming upon us. And of course, that's true. It is. The difference though between what the gospel teaches and what secular ideology would have us believe is that, number one, we can't avert it. What they're saying is, by turning off the heating or turning the lights off, You know, we can say prevent the catastrophe from happening. Well, we can't. Secondly, it's not because we're using too much energy. It's because we're sinful. A righteous God is not going to allow this wicked world to keep on running forever. And there is no way of avoiding this judgment except by turning to Christ and embracing the gospel. That and that alone is the only way of averting the catastrophe from touching ourselves. We are, as it were, the people with the blood over our lintels, the angel of death will pass by. But there is a time coming, says Isaiah, when living people, in fact, will be a rarity, rarer than gold. He says in verse 13, therefore, I will shake the heavens and the earth will move out of her place. Is this a reference to some terrible earthquakes, which perhaps are referred to in Revelation? Is it poetic language? I don't know. But we know it is evidence of the wrath of the Lord of hosts, or the Lord Almighty. We live in days in which it is common for people not to believe in God, or common for people to believe in a God of their own choosing, a God of love, by which they mean a kind of avuncular figure who gives you a bag of sweets when you've been good and turns a blind eye the rest of the time. Well, that is not the God of the Bible. The God of the Bible is a God of wrath. And yes, he is a God of love. He is love itself. There is no contradiction between these characters. We perhaps have it in our head that to be loving simply means to be nice all the time. I would not say the God of the Bible is a nice God. He's a loving God. He's a beautiful God. He is a righteous God. He is a holy God. He is a loyal God. But he is going to judge the world in his wrath. There is a day, in verse 13, of his fierce anger. Verse 14 says, it shall be as the hunted gazelle and as a sheep that no man takes up. Now, this is a strange pair of expressions vexed me for a period. I think it means that this gazelle being hunted, he's going to be caught in the end. And the sheep that no one takes up. Here is a sheep that kind of relies upon a shepherd, but actually there is no shepherd for it. It is going to die. This passage really is talking about coming destruction. It is going to happen. It is inevitable. The gazelle will run away for a period, but it will get caught. Every man will turn to his own people, and everyone will flee to his own land. Again, a strange expression. Are we talking about Babylon here? Babylon was a real mixture, a melting pot of various peoples who all moved together. Are they abandoning that land? I don't know, but what we know is that people are not going to stay where they were born. I'm not suggesting that is necessarily being fulfilled in our time right now, but maybe there's an element of that. Everyone who is found will be thrust through, and everyone who is captured will fall by the sword. This really is quite grim. Even those who escape this coming judgment, like the gazelle, like the sheep, they're going to get caught in the end as well. Their children also will be dashed to pieces before their eyes. Their houses will be plundered and their wives ravished. What a horrible time. Those of you who are here on Sunday, and especially the Sunday before, I said that there is a theme in the Bible that God uses evil men to judge evil men. He raised up Babylon to judge Israel. He raised up Persia to judge Babylon. He raised up the Greeks to judge Persia. He raised up Rome and so on. And there is a sense in which there are human agents at work here. But behind the scenes, a righteous God is pouring out his judgment upon a world which has rejected him since the fall. Well, what on earth do we get for that? Well, I would suggest to you, and although we believers, we're not immune from the trials and difficulties of this life. Indeed, we possibly have more of them. We have persecutions for righteousness' sake. The wicked are not persecuted for being righteous by definition. And yet, everybody in this room who believes the gospel, the wrath of God described in this passage cannot touch you. I mentioned before about the death coming to the firstborn in Egypt. What did the houses of Israel do? They smeared or painted the blood of the lamb over their doors, and the destroyer went on. There is a day, a dreadful day of wrath coming, and it cannot touch you. Because when the Lord Jesus hung upon the cross of Calvary, that was in one respect, verse 13, the day of his fierce anger, as far as my sin was concerned. Even before I'd been born, my sin had already been judged upon Christ when he hung upon that cross. The wrath of the Lord Almighty was spent upon Christ crucified. Now, of course, the Lord may chasten and discipline his children, but that's not the same as wrath. What we're reading about here is a fate and a future that is not ours. We are reading about a future which will not be anyone's who calls upon the name of the Lord in order to be saved. So when I was preparing and I thought, dear me, shall I keep on going till I find something positive? Well, I'm afraid there's quite a lot more judgment to come. You see, we don't like to read about judgment. We want to read about God's provision and God's kindness. And the Bible speaks plentifully of both. But there is a wrath to come. And that is a motivating factor, perhaps, in our sharing the gospel with the nations, as that psalm indicated. But it's also a reminder of what a wonderful position each of us is in. The wrath described by Isaiah cannot touch us. Thank God for the gospel. Mm-hmm.